Hello and welcome to another episode of the Purple Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Parker Fleming, and I have with me, as always, my co-host and friend, Grant McGalliard. Grant, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great, Parker.
It's playing the music again. Whoops.
Yeah, I was like, man, listen, it is a jazzy tune. I'm doing well. Parker, I have a question for you.
Okay.
What is your jam band experience?
Liking Widespread Panic in high school just to be different from my peers. And then like the summer before I went back to grad school, I like lived at my brother's couch and worked at a coffee shop and was just kind of a vagabond. And I watched Freaks and Geeks. And in the last episode of that, it proudly features the song Box of Rain by the Grateful Dead. And so I went down a very, very like American Beauty rabbit trail and kind of got deep into that. But I'd say that I have a pretty strong fence there, like kind of being into those bands. I'm not deep into the jam band phenomenon.
Okay. So when I sent you the song Climb to Safety by Widespread Panic earlier today, that was something you were familiar with. You weren't shocked by the fact that I sent you the second most popular song on Spotify by one of the five most popular jam bands in the world.
No, had heard of it. Was familiar. Okay.
All I'm saying is that it rips. I can't really get into jam bands. I like the Allman Brothers Whipping Post that goes on for 20 minutes. I can do that live at the Fillmore, but I don't know, man. I just get in the studio. It's the office bit. It's just play the right notes. I hate jazz. Just play the notes.
Jazz is stupid. shout out to King Crimson, who does 21st Century Schizoid Man, which most people know, and I knew first from
Power.
Power by Kanye. But really, I didn't know that I knew it. A friend of mine's middle school friend of mine, his older brother, they were in high school, did Battle of the Bands. Grant, they walked up and played this 20-minute song and then walked off. That was it. One song. One 20-minute song. Played it. It was awesome. It was an amazing bit. And there's only like two words in it the entire time. It was great. It was awesome. Yeah.
Candidly, it's pretty sick. Parker, you were telling me earlier about how much you still listen to Kanye's music. But maybe that's a conversation you can have offline.
Endorse most of the things that he says explicitly by listening to his music. Yeah, I think we were saying that exactly was what we were saying. I was today. I did today. I will confess. I had a little lull this morning. I got the gout feet, and it just kind of, you know, it just makes everything bad, right? And this morning I did. I need a little pump up, and so I went to the well. And for me, the well is like the classic like 2006 to 2009 rap songs. So that's like a lot of Lil Wayne, a lot of Eminem, some Kanye, Forever by Drake. Oh, that like everybody just comes in and rips a verse off. I was like, look, I just need this morning. I got to get hype. So I had my like high school football hype mix on and just kind of got out of the funk and got some stuff done today. So it's kind of nice.
I like that. That's good. That's good. Parker, you know, sometimes if you really want to pick me up in the morning, can I give you a tip? This is something I do.
I'm skeptical where this is going.
I put on a shirt by Home Field Apparel.
50-50, I put some Bailey's in my coffee and none of my coworkers asked me about it, or I put on a Home Field shirt.
Home Field Apparel. They have been a partner of this podcast before, and we are happy to bring them back along with everyone else. Father's Day is coming up. There's no better way. Listen, I have a dad. And the man doesn't buy shirts for himself. It's unbelievable. It is quite frankly ridiculous in the fact that the only shirt he has bought in the last 5 years for himself was from a restaurant that was on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Because he loves Guy Fieri. So he has a Captain Chuckamucks t-shirt. Who, no free ads to Captain Chuckamuck. If you are a fan of a football team and your dad is a fan of the same football team, you should get them a Home Field Apparel t-shirt based out of Indianapolis. I can't tell you how comfortable these shirts are. Amazing vintage college designs. There's like 150 colleges available. They've gone through the archives and have found some incredible logos, throwback shirts. I grew up a North Carolina basketball fan. They now have a 1982 national championship t-shirt and a 1993 national championship t-shirt for North Carolina, for example. I don't know how they licensed that. They somehow managed to do it. Pretty impressed, honestly. It's a great Father's Day gift. Also, they're affordable, and with our promo code, you can go to homefieldapparel.com, look at all of these designs, and use the code DCTF, that's for Dave Campbell's Texas Football, 15% off for first-time customers, 10% off for returning customers using the respective code. It's a hell of a deal, man. You're missing out if you don't take it.
Yeah, it is right there. It is right there for the taking, and they've got all kinds of weird schools. I know people collect them and get random ones. I think that's fun. I know that, like, I've gotten my brother in Arkansas one because he went to the University of Arkansas, and so they've got it's just a good gift for anyone in your life that is a college fan and doesn't want, you know, another set of, I don't know. I was talking about this the other day. Is like gifts in general for guys, like people just Google and like, what should we get? And it's like, oh, you get like a whiskey stones or like a, you know, just whatever, a shot glass or something. It's like, dude, don't do that. Be better than that. It's anyone that doesn't have whiskey stones already doesn't want them. They would have bought them themselves. Don't get them that. Get them a t-shirt from home field so they can rock some college football merch.
Yeah, it's they're fantastic designs. Again, that is homefieldapparel.com, promo code DCTF, 15% off for first time customers, 10% off for returning customers. Parker, it is time to talk about BYU Cougars. Our first foray into a new Big 12 team.
Indeed.
I'm kind of excited. I kind of want to see what's going to happen when BYU joins the Big 12. We talked about this with Ryan Nanny when he was on the podcast, and he was of the opinion that they're going to fit right in. You know, as good as they've been at football over their history, and as good as they have been in recent years with guys like Zach. Oh my God, I forgot his last name. Who the hell's that? Zach Wilson.
Zach Wilson, 2020. One of the best college football teams we've seen in the last couple of years. Yeah. In the last decade or so. With Zach Wilson, very very tough team. They the Riz team, yeah. I mean,
Zach Wilson.
There was a no comment. There was a stretch with Bronco Mendenhall. You know, where they had. What is that? 5 out of 6 years, they won double-digit games. And then obviously with Lavelle Edwards, just insane streaks in the 80s and even in the late 90s with him. Yeah, so some really impressive history and tradition of quality there. And then, of course, we know that, like, their fans are everywhere and their fans will show up everywhere. So it's not like, you know, they're going to be an unwelcome addition in terms of fan intrigue and feeling like they're excited about playing games. And for TCU fans, a familiar opponent, you know, having that short but fierce Mountain West rivalry with them. I think they had 2 game days with BYU. Maybe one of those is Utah and one of them was BYU, but at least one of those up in Provo was game day, you know, top 15 teams. So really, really good kind of history there, and some recent success with BYU for sure. But I do think kind of at a crossroads here with some changes they've had to make on the defensive side of the ball with, you know, we saw what happened, how they struggled when Jaren Hall was 100% last year. So definitely an interesting team and interesting. I think lastly, I'll say in the sense of the Big 12 operates a certain way in terms of like development cycles and kind of who's on and who's off and how you recruit and all that. And BYU kind of operates outside of the logic of all of that. And so as we're talking about development cycles and all that, it's going to be kind of a different conversation for BYU, which I think is really interesting. I would even go so far as to say that like the transfer portal is not going to affect them in the same way. And so an interesting test case to see as they join. Also really kind of a rubber meets the road for their general program of, hey, you've been operating a certain way as an independent. Now you're going to have to play an entire conference schedule. How is that going to change? Yeah.
BYU, by the way, does have apparel on homefieldapparel.com, in case you're curious. I am very, very intrigued by BYU's recruiting approach. And I'm not educated enough to talk about it a lot. But I know, for example, there are several people on BYU's roster that come from Euless Trinity High School in Texas, which has a large proportion of people that originated or immigrated from Micronesia and the Oceania area. And I know BYU does a lot of recruiting in Samoa, places like that, Guam. And I think it's a really, I don't know, just interesting facet of the roster. So keep that in mind. If you know anybody from Euless Trinity, I love a good Texas high school football connection. And I think that's a really unique relationship between Euless and BYU. So with that said, do you want to just delve in? Do you want to get into Parker, tell me, who are the BYU Cougars and what did they do last year?
Yeah, that's a great question. So they were a team that had some talent. I mean, we saw Jaren Hall get drafted. We saw Puka Nacua get drafted or maybe signed as an undrafted free agent. We saw Blake Freeland get drafted. A lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, Tyler Allgeier recently, you know, 2 years ago, I think, for them, got drafted and was 1,000-yard rusher for the Atlanta Falcons last year. 30.1 points. I thought so.
Damn, I didn't realize he was that good. Sorry, Tyler Allgeier is not a guy I thought that was going
to
crack the
210 attempts. That's why Bijan's projections are getting so high, is because they're like, okay, shoot, if they did that with Tyler Allgeier, what can they do with Bijan Robinson? But we'll see how that works out.
Desmond Ridder and Bijan in the backfield is the biggest, like, a new Big 12 and B college football sicko lineup of all time. So pretty excited.
Yeah, I mean, there's worse strategies in drafting the best college football players, but we'll see what the Falcons can we'll see what they can do. So BYU, pretty good offense, even with some limitations. And I think I'll discuss some specifics of that here in a minute, but 30.1 points a game, that was 10th in the new Big 12. They definitely struggled down the stretch in a couple games, points against 30.4 a game, which is ninth in the Big 12. And, that's kind of damning because, they did not play a Big 12 schedule last year. And so that's a little bit rough. Point differential, -0.03 points per game. That's ninth in the Big 12. Win percentage was in the regular season was 0.545, which is eighth out of Big 12 teams. Their expected win percentage, 0.495, was ninth in the Big 12. Grant, if you're sensing a theme here, I am talking about a team that is firmly ninth in the new Big 12 among those teams. And their differential between win percentage, actual win percentage, and expected win percentage was +0.5 percentage points. So fifth in the Big 12 there. So they did outperform just a little bit. From 2022, they were 8-5. Jaren Hall was hurt before the Notre Dame game, I believe it was. They were 5-1 with a bad loss to a really tough Oregon team. Then with Hall hurt, they lost four straight before they kind of rebounded to win their final four, including wins over Stanford. And hilariously, I forgot about this, New Mexico Bowl, they beat SMU, which was a lot of fun. And kind of a disappointing run after 11-1 and 10-3. The last two seasons, but for perspective, BYU had just had two double digit win seasons since 2012. And both of those came under Sitake. Mendenhall hadn't had one in those couple of years there. So that's 11 seasons with only two 10 win seasons. So 8-5 is not the disaster compared to relative expectations. They've only had one losing season under Kalani Sitake. That was 2017. His second year, they've had five straight bowls, six bowls in his seven seasons, and they're 4-2 in bowls, which I think is just kind of a good data point, given that they're not in a conference and it's kind of hard to adjust what they are or what they have been. Now they are in a conference and now we'll be able to adjust, but they do generally do okay in those bowls. Slotting might be an issue in terms of the caliber of team they're playing. But generally I think a successful bowl game record from this team as well.
Can I ask you, does the lack of 10 win seasons under Bronco Mendenhall surprise you? Given the reputation that BYU had under Mendenhall and the ability that Mendenhall had to jump from BYU to Virginia, a P5 program, although, again, as we talked about, they've basically been a P5 program. I'm surprised that they didn't win more games under Mendenhall. I think the reputation may have been a little bit too inflated.
I mean, you look at it's probably worth a deeper dive than I can totally give it. But Mendenhall comes in 2004, kind of as BYU is wandering in the post Lavelle Edwards wilderness. Gary Crouton goes 12-2 in that kind of 2001 season. And really that wasn't, you know, necessarily his team in year one, but then goes 5-7, 4-8, 5-6, got to do something different there. Right. And, Bracco comes in 2005, goes 6-6 and then rips off 11-2, 11-2, 10-3, 11-2, 7-6 with a New Mexico Bowl win. And then 10-3. And even as he quote unquote faded 8-5, 8-5, 8-5, 9-4 to end the season there, or to end his career before he moves, I think that Bronco Mendenhall basically did all one could do at BYU. I think that ceiling, and it's hard because they haven't been affiliated in the past. So their ceiling in the past has been the Las Vegas Bowl. Cause that's, I mean, just the way slotting works, they're not tied in. They're going to have to get a place where they'll travel. And, so there has been an inherent ceiling that I do think gets lifted and potentially gives Sitake an opportunity to go higher than Mendenhall. It takes the governor off a little bit if he can. So in that sense, I don't necessarily penalize Bronco Mendenhall, but I do think that like he did about as well as anyone could do with what BYU had in that situation.
I think that's fair. I'm just surprised that they didn't have I'm not making this comparison based on any school type or whatever. I'm surprised they haven't had like a Liberty year where it's like, hell, do we have to consider them for the G5 spot or a Notre Dame type year, which they've been compared to in the past? They play a hard schedule.
When they were in the Mountain West. So the problem there is like, if we look at their 2000 and, oh, let's look. Let's look at their 2009 Mountain West, because they played TCU there. We look at that. They went to the New Mexico Bowl. They were 11-2, right? And so their two losses are Florida State and TCU. Both of those were by double digits. They beat number 3 Oklahoma on a neutral site, 14-13, to start the season, right? But then they play Tulane, Colorado State, Utah State, UNLV, San Diego State, Wyoming, New Mexico, Air Force, and then they eke out Utah. So they've lost two games, one to a ranked team, one to an unranked team. In the Mountain West, you're going to get slotted. You're going to get jumped by TCU there. So it's like they ended up beating three out of the four ranked teams they played, but they got boxed out of the BCS because they lost to an unranked Florida State. And you just can't,
it's such a narrow window.
So there wasn't even the New Year's Six kind of onboarding. Like it's much easier for a P5 or a G5 team to get into the New Year's Six now, but the perverse reality of that is like, once that shifted and they got out of the Mountain West, then it was kind of like, will they, won't they? And so they were just never going to get the G5 spot, right? They were P5 enough that they weren't going to get in the New Year's Six that way, but they weren't G5 enough that they would get that one spot either.
Makes sense. I just feel like it's kind of a disservice to put a team that went 11-2 or whatever into the New Mexico Bowl. No offense to the New Mexico Bowl, of course. Shout out to the New Mexico Bowl. Great trophy. So last year, Parker, this team was 9th in the Big 12. We established that. Do you want to get into position groups? Where do you want to go from here?
Yeah, let's. I think let's start on the offense. Well, let's mention a couple of things. Their recruiting has not been amazing, but it's gotten a little bit better in the last couple of years. Last four classes, 82nd in 2020, 70th in 2021, 57th in 2022, and 52nd. In 2023. Yeah. So definitely increasing. Some of that is transfer portal, right? Some of that is the difference between 60th and 52nd is Keaton Slovis, right? Like those are the same classes. They got an upside transfer. So bringing in a little bit of that talent there, but a slight trend upward. We'll see how they can leverage the transfer portal. I think they have a strong appeal, like some of these Texas schools do, for guys to quote unquote come home. And home doesn't necessarily just mean a physical location for BYU. I think they have that as an advantage there. Overall.
I'm going to say it's an advantage, but it's also, and again, this is just matter of fact, it is a challenge. It's kind of the same challenge that, you know, that people always say Notre Dame faces, in terms of, Parker just slammed down his Diet Coke can in disagreement. And I'm very worried, but it's, it is a challenge for a religious institution, to recruit a lot of top talent just because there's parameters, and 52nd isn't terrible. Like you said, it's 30 places better than they were in 2020. So, and they've done well in the transfer portal. So just with that note, that it is difficult to recruit, I think, to Provo for any head coach. Yeah.
Mostly because the air quality gets really bad sometimes a year. It's kind of gross.
Well,
so.
I assume Rutgers, the official football team of New York City, is going down.
Many people have called Rutgers the BYU of New Jersey.
No, there's not been one single person that has called Rutgers the BYU of New Jersey.
Here's how tired I am, and here's how my brain is ringing right now. You know that song, Heads Carolina, Tails California?
I just put in
my head. I was trying to make the syllables work for Heads Rutgers, Tails Provo. Oh man,
Heads, BYU. Heads Piscataway, Tails Provo.
Yeah. BYU 70th overall in returning production, returning 63%. 83rd on offense, returning 62%, and 61st on defense overall. So definitely some turnover, definitely an opportunity to start fresh, I think is the way we'd positively frame that. Before we get into the units and the sides, let me just read some overall stats. BYU 49th in EPA per play margin last year, 16th on offense, 116th on defense. 30th offensive success rate, 126th defensive success rate, just getting beat up and down the field. 74th in net points per drive. They were 17th on offense, but they were 123rd on defense. Not great there. And 79th in net field position. So a little sloppy on the coaching special teams side as well. And then their echo ratio, the all important stat, 48.2. So less than 50% game control for an 8-5 team. That's actually pretty impressive. 48.2 is 81st in the nation.
Gotcha. Head coaches, we haven't said his name yet, I don't think. Kalani Sitake, former Utah guy, coming to BYU. Offensive coordinator is Aaron Roderick. You have some analysis here. Took over for Grimes went to Baylor, right? Jeff Grimes?
Grimes went to Baylor after 2020, but in 2019, the BYU offense was not going well. And Grimes actually left the sideline and went up to the booth and stopped calling plays. Roderick and Sitake kind of took over the passing game. And they kind of engineered the Zach Wilson was a little hurt in 2019, but they kind of engineered the Zach Wilson 2020 run. And they did a great job with Jaren Hall there. And so certainly a pretty good offensive duo there that has shown at the very least consistency after Grimes left, if not that they were kind of driving a lot of what Grimes had cobbled together in his vision there. I think we know that they run the, if I was talking about like central tenets, you know, Grimes called it like reliably violent offense. It's the RVO.
I'm pausing you there. Reliably violent.
Yeah. We've done this bit before. It's like super football speak, but that's Grimes's offense. And a lot of it is just like successful run game and then like have a deep threat, which yes, Coach Grimes, that is how offense is. That's good offense. I agree. You should do that. And, They're going to stick with kind of I call it the 1.5-1.5 personnel instead of like 12 or 21 or whatever, because it is a sniffer, a fullback, or a tight end. I don't know. Sometimes he lines up a little bit behind the tackle. Sometimes he's right up there in the tackles, but sometimes he's a tight end. Sometimes he's moving around. So they're going to have a running back, a tight end, and then another blocker dude in the backfield. Sometimes they'll bump Rex out. They'll run a little bit empty, a little bit of weirdness. They're mostly zone read. Yeah. And they love a little like an RPO with a glance to the tight end, just like a very straight hand the ball and throw it if it's there kind of a thing. I did like what they did with motion, even as I feel like their base offense is pretty straightforward. They're really, really saying like, hey, we're going to execute and out leverage. It's not as much bells and whistles. Like they're almost like the anti-Kansas just because their offense is good, but it is decidedly less like circuses than Kansas, right?
Sure.
Whereas Kansas is saying, we're going to out-leverage you by doing just all sorts of crazy shit. BYU is saying, hey, we're going to run the fundamentals really, really well. And we're just going to be able to kind of take over with that. They're going to do a lot of play action as long as the O-line allows, and they're going to do some motion. They're going to do a lot of split zone and then a motion on top of that and say, hey, we want you flowing one way so we can cut back the other, because we know that our offensive line is our strength, and we know that we have some athletes that can make some cuts in the backfield. And so generally, it's going to be a lot of tight end to the strong side, sniffer on the weak side. We're running split zone one way or the other. We're crossing back and forth on both of those offenses. Yeah.
So asking a question to kind of place it on a spectrum, not even necessarily on teams that we've talked about, but just in terms of teams in the Big 12. If you have Kansas running hyper motion, let's get weird as hell, because that's the only way we can beat teams. And then you have Kansas State under Klieman, who is, we're going to do four things and do them well. Are they kind of closer to maybe the vanilla spread of Iowa State, just with more motion? I mean, where do we put
BYU? I think they're a little more innovative than Iowa State, especially with like the RPO game.
Yeah.
And maybe with the, maybe that's because they just had better quarterback play last year and it worked a little better from what I watched. When they were healthy. I mean, at times it looked very bad. They had some gruesome losses last year. But I would say that they are playing a pretty Big 12 offense. I don't think they're going to approach the desired physicality of a Kansas State, but by no means do they have to resort to the – and I'm saying gimmickiness is a compliment, the gimmickiness of Kansas. I think that they have the athletes to enact their vision, but their vision is not as – physical as Kansas State, and it's not as spread and run things out as Kansas. Although I don't know that I love that those guys are on the opposite end of the spectrum, but I think it kind of helps us triangulate.
Well, yeah, so talking Chargers team we talked about. I mean, all right, I mean, listen, we could talk about gimmicky offenses in the Big 12, and we will. But anyway, so
go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say anytime I see. Going behind the scenes, Parker and I have this big sheet where we plan out our coverage of teams. And anytime I see key questions and the first thing is line turnover on offense, I kind of freak out. It's not good.
Yeah. E.M. Forrester once said, Grant, that just because a thing is going strong now, need not it mean it goes strong in the future. And BYU gets the benefit of the doubt. And we'll talk about that. But, buddy, you're turning over some real NFL guys. And some quality linemen that have been there, and you're going to start a couple sophomores, and you're going to start a transfer who I wanted to like in like 2019, but I don't know what we're doing here now. So maybe it was 2021. I think that's too far. I would think about too many yards back. I think 2019 is two seasons ago. I'm pretty sure.
I wanted to like Megan Fox in 2013. So we're fine.
Yeah. So line turnover is definitely difficult. I think there's another big question of like how to create without a real main threat on offense. So it doesn't look like there's like an obvious, this is how the offense is going to go. And, the depth is a little thin. And so I'm interested how they're going to be able to create, especially knowing that if a first option emerges, the gravity is going to go towards that person and it's going to be hard for them to counterpunch. Another question I have about this offense, depth. I think that the injury bug's gotten them the last couple seasons, and I think that they've struggled to be healthy, especially on the defensive side of the ball and some of their receivers. But on offense, I think that you know, if their receiver unit's this thin and you've got guys hurt, you're playing walk-ons, man. Like it gets pretty rough pretty quickly. And the last question I have is really, really kind of granular and stylistic, but and this leads us right into the quarterback conversation, I think. Jaren Hall ran 54 times last year. Keaton Slovis has 40 career attempts rushing in almost 1,000 snaps. So either that's going to change, right? Either Keaton Slovis is going to learn to run a zone read and be a running option, or they're going to just take out the quarterback run and the zone read, which was a huge facet of their offense last year, and just go to RPO on that. So I don't know. There's questions there about what the quarterback position is going to look like. And I think that takes us right into to the quarterback position here and what Keaton Slovis is going to be able to do.
So I think you and I might be in violent agreement with Keaton Slovis. So just table setting, Jaren Hall last year, 65% completion rate, 8.4 yards per attempt, a 31-6 touchdown to interception ratio. He also fumbled six times. that's a lot of times to fumble. I don't care if you are running. I don't care. Don't fumble six times in a season. And he was terrible when he was blitzed. That's going to get into BYU's offensive line issues, but he had a 24.2% completion rate under pressure. Yikes. It's not good.
Yeah.
And the Minnesota Vikings drafted him anyway.
Sure.
So Keaton Slovis comes in.
He was hurt last year. I think
it's important to remember that he was. Come on, man. I mean,
and we'll talk about I'm not gonna give it away. I'm gonna keep a spoiler here, but like I think it's a pretty big red flag on the offense, and we'll talk about why that mattered last year too.
That's fine. Please tell me when I'm wrong. This will be a fun exercise, but I think if you're going to be a running quarterback, you can't have a 24.2% completion rate under pressure. Not even a running quarterback, a quarterback who can operate the that dual threat option.
I think you got to have better decision making. Absolutely, there's something to be said there. But again, I think him getting in those positions is being pressured that much is bad. But
yeah,
I'll lead us into this. I'll say Jaren Hall has been called many things. Keaton Slovis has not been called those same things, I think, is the way I'll frame that.
No, that's fair. And again, I changed my display name from Hater of the Year because I don't – like, Jaren Hall's cool. Jaren Hall rules. He was good last year at BYU. That's 31-6 TD-INT ratio is a good ratio. But Keaton Slovis, for those that don't know, was at USC for 3 years, transferred to Pitt, now transferred to BYU. This is going to be a diametrically opposed offense to what he ran at Pitt because Pat Narduzzi's Carnival of Horrors. Pat Narduzzi saw Kenny Pickett throw touchdowns and said, I never want to do that ever again. And Keaton Slovis happened to be the quarterback that succeeded Kenny Pickett. So not great. 2022 at Pitt, he had an average depth of target of 10.1, 7.6 yards per attempt, 58.5% completion rate. Not good. And a 10-9 touchdown to interception ratio. Also not good. The year before at USC had an 8 out of 9, 64.8% completion rate. So right about where Jaren Hall was. An 11-8 touchdown to interception ratio. So here's my thesis statement, Parker. I think Keaton Slovis is an upgrade. And I'm saying that only by the I can't pronounce this word, the naiveness of believing it is freshman year at USC. Do you remember what he did freshman year at USC?
I like to say it like I'm like a Southern
naivete.
Lawyer. Naivete, yeah.
His freshman year at USC, 2019, 71.9% completion rate, 30 touchdowns, 9 picks, 8 out of 8.7, and he had 15 drops. He also scrambled 18 times. He was a good quarterback. There is a better quarterback inside Keaton Slovis.
Maybe only in the sense that there's a better quarterback like operating him like a robot. Like the little quarterback inside of him is better. But I think the knee injury is rough.
Yeah, we gotta address that. Yeah.
So I just think that changes how a guy looks. Healthy Slovis in a pass friendly offense. Like I can believe that, right? I can get into that. I can get down with it. But I've seen what he is right now. This feels like a recipe for disaster, right? We've got like multiple transfers. That's a huge red flag for me that he didn't stick somewhere. It's got BYU's got an epic lack of wide receiver depth that we're going to talk about here. And Slovis is not super mobile in an offense that basically mostly functioned by mobile quarterback last year. I think there's a super low floor. I think this potentially could get kind of ugly if they can't figure out what they want and get their feet down. So I can see the ceiling, but I can more clearly see the floor. I think on this, I think this is going to be a rough year. And I mean, like Jaren Hall's pressure to sack ratio last year when he was hurt, like at his worst was 11.9. That was Keaton Slovis's last year in like his best year. It's 16.9% for his career. I think it's going to be a rough transition for an offense that really, really functioned on guys kind of extending plays with their legs, making stuff happen. And Slovis is very much going to be more of your quick read pocket passer guy. It's going to be a little different, I think. And so I can, these numbers that we're putting on these are not like averages, right? They factor in the variance. It's almost like a mean variance assessment here. Because I just think that the variance is skewed absolutely towards the negative, and that there's potential for this to get a very, very low floor.
Fair. I would agree with you that there's a low floor if the transfer doesn't work. I would also not toss in anything that happens in the Pat Narduzzi offense into accountability for a quarterback. So I think there's a higher ceiling, put it that way. And there is a lower floor.
Grant, Keaton Slovis would not be the first man to head to Provo and have a revelation from God and ascend to a higher plane. So I can totally believe that. I'm going to go a little lower. I'm going to put this at a 9 out of 15.
Okay. Well, you know what? We will fight about this after he drops like 350 yards on, I don't know, UCF or whoever. I haven't looked at the schedule, but yeah. Tell me, Parker, who does Keaton Slovis have beside him in the backfield? It's Aiden Robbins, and who the hell else?
Yeah, I think that Aiden Robbins from UNLV is a good pickup in the transfer portal to fill in portal to fill in for Brooks from last year. The BYU ran 50.6% of the time last year, just negative 0.2 rush rate over expected. So, I mean, just basically running as situationally, but that doesn't include Hall scrambling, which I think mattered a whole lot. There, Robbins was a 1,000-yard rusher last year, and should be fine and kind of in the run game there. If we look, you know, who's going to be behind him? I've lost my notes. Here we go. I have 19 windows open. Good Lord. Behind him is going to be. Robbins. Behind Robbins is going to be just an all-time name here. Hinkley Ropati, I believe, is the name there, who's a junior. And he should be more of a pass catcher, which I think that's going to be important because BYU only had 36 total halfback targets last year and really wasn't a factor in the pass game. Their ADOT was pretty low, but Aiden Robbins had 28 by himself. Go ahead. I think I lagged.
So they only threw to the it's my Wi-Fi, but they only threw to the halfback 3 times per game is what you're telling me. That's pretty
36 times. That is
impressive.
And a lot of that was check downs. So Aiden Robbins had 28 by himself last year. So I think that he could be involved in the pass game potentially. But still, I think I that could be a fun way to get Slovis going early. Like, I mean, you know, it's kind of a 3-man game with him and Rex until one of these receivers proves to be a dependable option. I think you could do worse than that for kind of triangle offense, if you will. Robbins has handled a large workload. I think there's so much turnover in the offensive line here that there's kind of a low floor and a low ceiling, but kind of like a pretty good mean here overall. So I'm pretty okay with the running back room here, just because it's not like they're not going to have a Tyler Allgeier. They're not going to have, you know, a fringe Heisman candidate or anything with Robbins, but Robbins should be more than enough to kind of provide the pro style rushing attack that they need next to Keaton Slovis. So I have this unit as a 7. Grant also has this as a 7. I think he dropped off with a Wi-Fi issue, but I'm going to soldier on here for a second. So that brings us to Parker has 9 out of 15 at the quarterback and then 7 out of 10 at the running back. Grant, 7 out of 10 at the running back and 11 out of 15. So similar units there. One thing I do want to point out about these two, about the running back specifically, is in the formations that they run with the split zone and the play action that they have, a lot of those issues, there is a big issue in that the running back has to block a lot. And Brooks was a really bad blocker last year, and we saw Hall get punished for it. And Robbins was arguably worse, had a worse PFF grade against a worse schedule at UNLV. Does that limit formations? Like, if I get, you know, I don't have a solid run blocking option in the backfield, and Slovis isn't a great mobility, and I'm turning over a bunch of the offensive line, what can I not do as much on the offensive side of the ball as I want to do? I don't know.
Does that bring in the sniffer role more? kind of with that fullback tight end.
Well, but what he's doing a lot of time is he's doing like split zone action and then the running back's blocking.
Yeah,
here.
But you need someone back there to pass block because.
Right. And so if I've got to do that, then I can't run split zone action. I've got to change.
Yeah, I know. Right? I'm just saying, like, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what BYU does with it. Also, started a parachute back in. Have we talked about that? I think Robinson, like, did you read my stats? I had some stats. I had two stats. This is fun for listeners. 12 rushes over 15 yards for Robinson last year at UNLV.
Nice. And, it's Robbins.
Yeah, I'm an idiot. I misspelled it. Robbins, 12 rushes over 15 yards, 47 first downs.
Very fun.
That's a lot of first downs.
Very fun. Not a good schedule. Team that ran a whole lot, but
still. I'm excited for Robinson BYU. I think it's going to be a great addition. I'm really just kind of paranoid if I'm BYU about who's going to back him up. And like you said, So
Rapati, it's a guy. But again, running backs are largely products of their circumstances.
Well,
so,
Parker doesn't think running backs matter. So I don't even know why we bother talking about it.
Past a certain threshold. let's talk about receivers. Let's get through those.
So Puka Nacua is no longer there anymore. Puka Nacua, apologize. Drafted by the Rams in the fifth round. Braden Cosper also gone. So that's two out of BYU's top five receivers. Also, Gunnar Romney, no longer there anymore, so we can't make those jokes.
Shout out to Gunnar Romney, who I believe took a partial scholarship because his family could pay for it so that somebody else could have a scholarship and they could recruit better, which is evidently a concerted effort with like NIL and stuff to get these kind of better well-off families who are going to pay the cheap price for BYU anyway to kind of help kids get there who might not be able to otherwise. Interesting strategy.
Yeah, 100%. And also, like, he made some, like, meaningful catches for BYU. Like, he was an active part of that offense. Yeah. Anyway, but they do return three of the top five targets. Chase Roberts, Keanu Hill, Cody Epps. Then a tight end, Isaac Rex, who we mentioned earlier. Also, Talmadge Gunther, which is a fantastic name, comes back at wide receiver. They have a couple transfers. Curious to see how they plug into this offense. Keelan Marion from UConn and Darius Lassiter from Eastern Michigan, both rated three-star. So Roberts is kind of a dog. This is a thin wide receiver room. I'm going to be honest with you. They're going to have to rely on a lot of people being – and I don't even mean this term. And like they're going to rely on like a lot of grit monsters, right, and just people willing to go 5 yards over the middle and make a catch. They have two deep threats. You have Keanu Hill, averaged 15.7 yards per catch on a 14.6 ADOT last year. That's 1.73 yards per route run. He's 6'4", 215. So big ball. I mean, that's all the physicality you want. Roberts is 6'4", 210, and averaged 1.99 yards per reception. Yards per route run last year. He's going to fill in to Puka's spot. In the slot, you have Cody Epps. 2.91 yards per route run last year. Not bad. But is anyone going to reach, for example, Puka had a 90 grade on PFF last year. Don't think.
And it's my sense that Epps had 49 targets. So that's actually
that's not bad. Listen, if you put it this way, it's going to be tough to find two cornerbacks that can cover Hill and Roberts on the outside.
Like
2.64 guys is tough to throw at a defense.
And Roberts has got a little gadget in him. Like 1 in 5 snaps, he was playing out of the slot. And so last year, especially when guys got hurt, Chase Roberts had a couple games. I think maybe the Baylor game. Let me make sure I'm saying that correctly.
Yeah, he had a big one. I can't remember who it was either. But
Baylor game, 122 yards, 15 yards per reception on 12 targets. So that – and then the other one was Utah Tech, but he had 82 yards on 3. So just had, just a couple huge early ones there. So filled in, I think that Baylor game is kind of best case scenario of like what Chase Roberts could be. I think that he has to be the guy. And again, I think wide receiver rooms are all about gravity, right? Like,
sure.
Is there going to be enough gravity with Rex and with Hill and with Epps to free up Roberts, or is Roberts just going to get covered and then there's nothing else that they're going to be able to do there?
Yeah. I think I'm probably a little bit higher on Hill than you, which is going to reflect on our grades coming up. I think Robert's going to wind up being wide receiver one, despite the fact that he was wide receiver three or four last year. All I'm saying is behind those top guys, there's nothing. And they're going to have to rely on some guys to step up.
And they've gotten hurt a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have it as a charitable seven.
Yeah, I see that. I'm at six. I'm giving them the full. The full ding. That's out of 10. So 60% for me sure. there. Sure, sure. Not a bad unit. I think Roberts could be pretty productive, but not a unit that strikes fear into the heart of opponents. I think.
Okay. I think by size,
kind of a common theme on this offense.
Yeah. It this offense. Okay. But that's all I got.
Yeah.
And there's kind of the same scenario on the offensive line where, there are some people.
There's some names. Kingsley Suamatia is going to be the left tackle. What a man. He's 80.7 pass block grade last year. He was playing right tackle. He had Freeland as an anchor. So the argument there would be like, well, he's playing right tackle and had a really good left tackle there. But if you watch the film, Blake Freeland looks kind of bored on some reps. Specifically, I was watching like the Notre Dame game, where I think that Notre Dame was just like, we're just not going to try very hard against this guy because we're not going to beat him. So let's go elsewhere. So like, I think Kingsley got some pretty good reps against pretty good competition by way of kind of general equilibrium there. So that 80.7 is interesting. He shifts over. Waylon LaPowell is basically brand new, no snaps. I think there's the combo at center of Pay and Molly. Connor Pay is, 6'5", 312, 91.5 pass block on the interior offensive line last year. Pretty pass good. Blocking great. Paul Molly, I'm betting Pay plays center and Molly plays guard because Molly is 6'3", 300. Maile Molly. I don't know.
I would say Maile, I would think, but yeah.
Yeah, so I'm thinking he's going to play guard because he's a little smaller, a little more athletic, and I think as they move out, if they have to keep an extra guy in the backfield, maybe he frees them up to do a little bit more zone blocking, and he could pull a little bit as a little more and Pay is honestly not a great run blocker if you look at his PFF grade. So, like, I'm speculating there, but I think that's going to be Pay at center and Maile. I thought Caleb Etienne is going to start here on the right tackle. He's not on the roster, so he's coming in late again, which is kind of the problem with Oklahoma State the first time. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't there for spring. That's kind of a red flag. So right tackle, I'm calling a big question mark here. They had to replace Freeland, Barrington, and LaChance. That's three guys who all started basically the entire season. Pay and Suamatia played a bunch last year as well. They ran a lot. They played in a run situation a lot, and they did pretty well overall. If I look at the offense, their rushing success rate was, 48th, 40.5. But Grant, I do have to point out, here's just a couple of the defenses that they played. Sure. And their run defensive rankings. Arkansas, 112th. Wyoming, 117th. Notre Dame, 103rd. UCF, 130th. Baylor, 95th. Utah State, 113th. Oregon, 92nd. Are you sensing a pattern about the opponents
that
BYU played last year and the run?
Arkansas was that bad at run defense.
There's some opponent adjustments that probably, can't opponent adjust yourself out of the basement. Like, it's bad.
Right.
And so I think that the success from the offensive line last year was a little bit inflated by opponent. They have a harder defensive line slate at the very least, just given who they're going to play. And they're going to see more diversity in their defensive opponents with how prolific like the tight front is and some defensive variants in the Big 12. It's high quality. I think it's a little bit boring. They get the benefit of the doubt for me. I'm worried about Etienne, but I'm going to trust BYU's pipeline. I'm going to trust their development that this is probably the most solid part of the offense here for me is the offensive line. I think that they're going to be good. They're going to be consistent. The run game is probably not going to be as good as it looked last year with the mobility of Hall and with how poor their opponents were, but I'm comfortable giving this a 12 out of 15.
Okay. I'm going to go one spot lower. I'm going to go 11. I think the tight front worries me, as you say, as prevalent as it is in the Big 12, the tight front worries me with the question marks at guard and center between Pay and Maley. And I think Slovis's inability to move around in the pocket is going to magnify any mistakes on the offensive line. So I have this as an 11, which ironically is the same grade I gave Keaton Slovis. So I have the offense as a 36. You have them as a 34. Again, that is out of 50.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So I'm giving them a 68 grade on offense, effectively. Okay.
I'm doing reflection. I have... boy, this is really fun to do week to week because I had TCU as a 33 and you had him as a 37. This is very fun. Yep. Okay. All right, moving on to the defense. Parker.
Yeah, and we're at 51, so we'll do defense and schedule a little speedy.
Yeah. We'll move through it. Jay Hill is the new defensive coordinator for BYU, was Weber State's head coach. Parker, Weber State beat North Carolina in the 1999 NCAA tournament. Carolina was 3 seed. Weber was a 14. That's just a fun fact. And that's how I know it's not pronounced Weber. So, yeah. Hill was 68-39 over 9 seasons at Weber, 4 seasons with 10 plus wins, semifinal in 2019. That is a FCS team. And worked with Satake at Utah. He was previously like the special teams coordinator and then various position coaches. If you read anything about Jay Hill, the term aggression comes up a lot in the way he coaches defense. You kind of have them marked down as more of a 4 down. The tape I've seen is a 3, but I think they kind of vary it a little bit between 4 down and a 3 with the edge that stand up. They're kind of, you know, ready to rush the passer. There is a quote from the Deseret News who, you know, they did great work covering the Utah area. Parker, let me read you this quote. You tell me if it sounds good or not. We've got to continue to recruit at a high level and get better personnel. And coaches have to get better at putting the players in the right situation. And our players need to get better at learning the scheme we've implemented. I say we're off to a great start, but we have a ways to go. Is that what you want to hear from your defensive coordinator or no?
I'm trying to remember exactly what game it was last year that was like, it was USC was playing somebody. And somebody on Twitter was like, Grinch needs to call a timeout and get his guys right. And I was like, what is Alex Grinch going to do? Call a timeout and say, be better athletes? Like, why is that? Why would you waste a timeout on the fact that these dudes just can't play? And like, that's kind of BYU's problem on defense right now. It's just like, sure, there's been some injury issues, but like the defensive coordinator hasn't been good, but they were recruited well. They don't have dudes. Like, what can you do? It's like, yeah, man, I can only do what I have with the dudes that I have. And I don't feel like he thought he has any dudes here.
I admire the aggression, let's call it, of coming into a new job and say, man, we got to get better personnel. This ain't going to work. You look at key questions. I mean, Hill and Satake clearly respect each other. Even going from a head coaching job from the FCS to a coordinator job at FBS is something that we should talk about one time in the offseason because I think it's a really interesting move. But they've worked together at Utah all those years. There's no personnel. And also my second question, so we'll get to this later, but from Weber State, Hill brings Eddie Heckard, and I think he could be maybe the player on this defense at cornerback. But before we get to the defensive backs, Parker, would you mind walking us through the defensive line, which is intriguing, at least?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I loved Eddie Hecker's first album, Ukulele Songs. It's pretty good.
Okay, that's a fun little Easter egg for the folks.
Defensive line. It probably isn't going to be that bad relative to where else it could be. But again, I think that BYU's advantage historically has been in the trenches. And here, I just don't think they're going to have that much of an advantage. Maybe I'm unclear at this. Last year, they're running 4 down. Are you saying that Hill's bringing in, they're going to run a little bit more 3 down as their kind of base package?
Yeah, there's going to be more 3 down under Hill.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's certainly easier to transition that way. Although, I mean, they have Mahi as kind of that 6'1", 310 dude. really, really big dude. The ends looking at Batter and Mangelson, I think, is a great pair of, you know, potentially go get them dudes at the end position. And you know, a couple, one or two guys who haven't played a ton, I think, at that tackle position who will fill in. So I'm going to say I like that they have a good nose tackle. I think that's a key. We saw that with like TCU last year, where it's like, oh, if you have a good nose tackle, pressure's off. But I don't think this is an exceptionally talented unit, and I think there are going to be growing pains on the offensive or the defensive line here. So I'm pretty not optimistic. I'm actually less optimistic about this than any other position group. I'm giving this a 6.
Yeesh. Okay.
Better than Kansas.
Well, listen, what isn't? I have one question for you. Does Atunasia Mahi count as a shithouse? 6'1", 315.
6'1", 315 is getting funny, I think. I need to honestly like see a picture of him standing up. We're gonna Google this right now.
Do you bulge? Where do
you... Oh, buddy. Oh, buddy. I think, no, dude, I think we're talking Butterball.
Oh,
the way he carries it is so interesting.
Okay.
Look, I just texted you this. I'm saying this is like a fat 33-year-old myself. Like, I'm out of shape. I'm not commenting on his body from the standpoint of being shaped. I'm saying, like, the way he carries it, he looks a lot more Butterball than...
Oh, that's a large fella.
Than Fireplace. Hi. He's a big man.
Oh, look at the biceps. He could beat both of us up easily.
Oh, easily. Yeah, but that's a low bar.
Oh, fair enough. Okay, I have this. There are enough returners. I think the edges are fine. I have it as a 9 out of 15. I'm gonna net out there. Boy, this is weird. Knocking down BYU in this Excel sheet we have. Okay,
I don't think I am. I think that I had Satake rated low. I think that way too early power ratings before I even did this with the numbers. I had them low. So like, it's gonna be a hard year, man. I can run to
yes, real quick. Get us through the linebacker.
Linebacker. Oh, so I don't know.
I know, man.
You want to talk about like momentum with the line and the tier. I don't know. The linebackers are gonna be Thule's a senior, he's been around. Bywater's a junior, he's been around. I'm not even gonna try to Vong Fanchen. Maybe it's not even close to
Vong.
It.
We're
just gonna call him AJ Vong. He's he's gonna be later onto campus. I think he got there in May. That's a Utah State transfer, so that's a pull up from a G5. Again, I normally trust upgrade transfers more than I do downgrade transfers. He had 101 tackles last season for Utah State, and Thule and Bywater is pretty good. I think this is a fine starting trio, even if it's uneventful.
By the way, that's not Bywater's first name.
Thule and Bywater. Yes, two guys.
Ben Bywater is his first name. Yeah.
But none of them, practiced at all in the spring. So everything that's like positive about the defense, they weren't involved at it all. So they got no spring practice. And I think we're going to have to see what it looks like for them to fill in there. So I'm not in love with this unit. I think it's fine. If they would like been together for 2 years, maybe I would be a little more happy. But if they're going to switch from a 4 down to a 3 down, that means linebackers going to have to start making tackles in different ways. And these guys did not get a lot of reps in the new system so far. I think we're still looking at an adjustment curve here. So I'm going 6 out of 10. We could continue the trend of sixes on defense there. It's not aggressively bad, but look, man, like, yeah, you're passing. I don't think you're failing, but you're just barely passing for me.
It's a 5 for me. I mean, I like Bywater. Boy, I really just don't like this linebacker core. Not as people. I'm sure they're fine people. I'm very worried about them in this new system. I think a system that gives athletes a chance to be aggressive is probably better than a system that is very structured and is like, hey, we're going to run these plays exactly. So I think
that we're saying the exact same thing about TC last year. So there's an argument, right? I think there's an argument there.
Exactly. That 100%. Yep. And so there is a ceiling for this group to improve, but for right now I have -5. The aggression also kind of translates to the defensive backfield. Parker, I watched tape of Weber State against Utah State last year. They shut out Utah State, an FCS team beating an FBS team. So that was impressive. But they do lose Gabe Judy Lawley, who's a transfer to Tennessee, Caleb Hayes, D'Angelo Mandel, Taylor Alfrey. They keep Micah Harper, and they keep Jacob Robinson. So Harper's going to be the mainstay at safety, and Jacob Robinson's going to be, I would say, cornerback number one. But again, they bring in Eddie Heckert, a cornerback, following Jay Hill from Weber State. Four-star transfer, FCS All-American. He's going to be your lockdown guy. There are unknown variables, especially at safety. It looks like it's going to be Malik Moore starting across from Micah Harper. He had a broken hand last year, but he's also in his sixth season. So there is some experience, even if it's not in the system. Just for statistical purposes, Robinson last year allowed a 67.2 completion percentage when targeted, which isn't ideal. Maybe he'll get better. Who knows? And Harper allowed a 60%, which at safety, you're covering a lot of deep balls. You're kind of coming down and making some choices. So a little higher than normal, but doesn't really concern me as much. I don't know. What are your thoughts about this unit? I mean, I don't want to, you know, end it without allowing you to speak on it.
Yeah, BYU was 116th in EPA per pass on defense last year.
So not good.
They were 124th in third and fourth down success allowed. They were 122nd in early downs EPA allowed. I'm torn here with specifically, like, with the defense in general and with the defensive backfield and specifically, I'm torn between the idea that there is such a thing as regression to the mean, but also the idea that, like, in college football, it can always get worse. And so I just am not inspired by this defense. I think that, again, we've talked about kind of this idea of, like, the interdependency of these defensive groups so much this offseason. I think that I'm underwhelmed by the defensive line. I'm very underwhelmed by the linebackers. And, you know, whatever bright spots I kind of see back here, I think that they're going to have to grow a lot very quickly, and there's going to be an adjustment process. And again, I think this is going to be tough this year. I'm going to give them a 6 out of 10. I'm sticking with it. I gave BYU not super great grades on defense. I don't think they deserve it. That's an 18 out of 35 for me, just because the historical performance hasn't been good. The quality of talent hasn't been great. They're switching systems, so there's going to be kind of a mess there. And their guys haven't even been in spring with this new system. You know, the guys that need it the most, the linebacker unit. So I think it's a tough draw all around.
Okay. I think that's totally fair. I have the defensive backs at an 11, just because I do think that Heckard's going to be a really good addition to this team. And I think getting, gosh, sorry, I had my,
No, you have it at seven.
Seven. Sorry. What did I say?
11.
I'm losing my confused. Mind. I had a, seven. Well, not an 11 because it's out of 10. Sorry. I had my screen. Malik Moore, getting him back is going to be a boon for this team. So let's see, you have the BYU defense at a 6 out of 15 on the defensive line, 6 out of 15 at linebacker, 6 out of 15 at defensive back. That is an 18. That is one spot better than Kansas. Woof. I have them at it. Well, I have them as a 9 out of 15 on the defensive line, a 5 out of 10 at linebacker, and a 7 out of 10 at defensive back for a 21. That is four spots better than Kansas and tied with Iowa State. But you and I violently disagreed on the Iowa State defensive.
I have Iowa State's defense 10 points better than BYU's. Yep, I'm comfortable with that.
And I have Iowa State's tie. Yep, okay, that's fine. Listen.
Whoa. So with your coaching and special teams rating, what do you have? Yeah. And then what's your rating and the probability of winning against an average team and probability of making the bowl?
Yep. So I have the coaching at an 11, coaching and special teams. I do think the addition of Hill, who's been a special teams coordinator, is going to be great, but BYU does have an actual special teams coordinator, Kelly Poppinga, who took over that role last year. So I have them at a 68 total, which would put them above Kansas, above Iowa State, and below TCU, a 59% win probability against an average team, and an 82.3% chance to make a bowl.
Dang. Yeah. So yeah. I have them at 11 coaching as well. I'm much lower on the defense. So I have them as a 63 overall, which ties them for Kansas for fourth out of four teams that we've previewed so far. So they have a 44% win probability against an average team and a 44.5% chance of making a bowl against a schedule full of average teams, which we know is not the case. So, but a good exercise all the same there. So I'm a little lower. I think the depths at quarterback could get a little lower, and I think the highs on defense are a little lower than potentially what you think there. And obviously we'll see that bear out over the course of the season. But let's do a little schedule breakdown.
So looking at this, so BYU is scheduling two FCS teams.
Because they're playing, 10 Power 5s now?
Yeah, that's still crazy. Anyway, so BYU starts the season hosting Sam Houston. My mother's alma mater, by the way. Shout out, Carrie.
Go Bearcats with a K.
Go Bearcats with a K. I'll call it a win. That's fine.
Yep, that should be a win.
Southern Utah should also be a win.
Yep.
Unless you know something about what's Southern Utah's mascot?
Southern Utah.
I'm looking it up right now. They are the Thunderbirds. Cowboys? That's sick as hell.
Thunderbirds. That's Thunderbirds. Pretty cool. Oh, yeah. They did something recently. I feel like there's something about them. Didn't they beat somebody last year?
Who can say? I don't know. But should be a win for BYU.
They beat Sam Houston. That's interesting.
Really? Sam Houston's a good FCS team. Anyway.
Yeah, well, they're moving up to FBS.
They are.
They lost 73-7 to Utah.
Yeah, it's not great. BYU then goes to Arkansas. Got to go ahead and knock that down as a loss. Yep. Well, so does BYU.
Yep. I'm calling that a loss. Yep.
Okay. At Kansas. This is fun. I don't remember what we said about BYU and Kansas in our power rate.
By looking at power ratings, I think I'm calling it a loss because they're on the road. Because I have them rated the same as Kansas. And so I'm gonna say it's a loss.
Yeah, I think I had this as a loss as well. They are home for Cincinnati. Boy, that
win.
Cincinnati's that bad.
We're gonna end up projecting Cincinnati to go 0-9, even though I know they're not going to, but like I just am gonna end up projecting
them to do that. Okay, I'm gonna put it as it's home. I'll put it as a win. Bye at TCU, loss.
Probably a loss.
Yeah, because we had TCU going like 8-0 and then finishing 8-5 or whatever it was.
Yeah, this is a real dude. Post bye here. This is a real welcome to the Big 12, dude. This sucks.
Yeah. Hey, congratulations, home for Tech. I think it's a loss.
I'm gonna go loss there as well.
At Texas, loss.
Would be funny if they won again, but I think a loss.
It 100% would. West Virginia stinks, point blank, but it's at West Virginia, so I'm calling it a loss.
I'm going to call that a win. I think that's a win.
Okay. This is going to wind up with me having BYU like 7 points higher than you and then predicting a worse win-loss record than you.
I think you're just going to predict everyone to go 7-5 in the Big 12.
That's also a possibility. Iowa State at home, win.
I actually want to see what I said about this.
I know. I do too.
I have them 10 points worse. It has to be, but I just want to be consistent. I have Iowa State at a 60. I have Iowa State at 6 points better. So I'm going to call this an Iowa State win. So that's a BYU loss. But I just want to make sure I said that in the Iowa State show.
Yeah. While you pull that up, we can go ahead and knock this out real quick. Home for Oklahoma, loss. And at Oklahoma State, loss.
I
have them at 1, 2, 3.
I reserve the right to call that a win for Oklahoma State. BYU, we said loss. Both of us said loss for Iowa State.
Do you want to keep it?
But I have to. No, I have to say that it's a. I have to say that it's a. Yeah, we said Iowa State was going to lose.
But I'm
going back and forth. I'm saying BYU is going to lose. Now, having looked at the numbers for both of these teams, that's where I'm at. I'm tempted to call this an Oklahoma State win, but I think it's going to be a loss.
It's at Oklahoma State. They're not going to roll over and die that poorly.
Wait, how do I have? Oh, because West Virginia, Iowa State. I think out of West Virginia, Iowa State, and Oklahoma State, they go 2-3. But I have it projected one, where I have them 4-8. Yeah. Two and one. I have them 4-8 though. Yeah, gross.
This is really interesting. Missing? So I have them at 4-8, but tied with Kansas, who I think I had Alex. No, sorry. You have them at 4-8, but tied with Kansas. And I think we both have Kansas making a bowl. I have them 4 points ahead of Kansas, 9 points ahead of Iowa State, and going 4-8. We are morons, but
these don't have to make sense. Again, it's a good exercise to go through pen and paper. These don't have to make sense because what we're going to do once we rank all the teams, Grant, is we're going to go through and give win probabilities and calculate the schedule, and then we'll have actual predictions. So these are just exercises for now. So I'm comfortable with that. I think it's okay.
It is. Yeah. And also, not every team plays the same schedule. Like, you get better home and away. You get better, you know, you don't have to play Oklahoma and Texas and Oklahoma State and TCU or whatever.
So, Grant, Alan Watts once said, you're under no obligation to be the same person you were 5 minutes ago. And I think that's true with our projections here. It's okay. I can change my mind.
Listen, a river is never the same once it passes by a certain point.
Are you quoting Siddhartha? Are you trying to talk? Are you trying to test Siddhartha to me?
I'm trying, and I can't remember the exact quote. All right.
Parker, let's go.
This has been the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGallard. Spelled like it sounds with all those vowels on Twitter. Oh, wait, we forgot. We got to do the Big 12 randomizer.
Oh, who we who we get next week?
Yeah. Okay, I'm pulling this up. Tell me about something cool that you're doing right now.
About to go to sleep. Reading this cool book about it's called The Ferryman by Cronin, I think is his last name. It's like a popular sci-fi book. It's kind of interesting.
I'm going to my family's ranch house this weekend, and I'm going there solo with my dog, and we're going to just kind of.
I don't think you know what solo means.
Okay, well, yeah, because I got to take care of that maniac, but we're just gonna go vibe out. I'm pretty excited. All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
3, 2, 1. Texas Tech Red Raiders. Get your guns up, Parker.
Interesting. That'll be a fun one. That'll be a good one. I think, this is going to be, I got to do a lot of work on Texas Tech because I think there's a lot of disparate opinions about them. I think Brett McMurphy had them in the New Year's Six. So we'll see about that.
One more time. My name is Grant McGallard. You can find me on Twitter. Spell like it sounds with all those vowels at Grant McGallard. He is Parker Fleming. He is at Stats of War. He does a lot of really cool stuff with Super Sports. We'd like to give a shout out to the Republic of Texas Football Network, our friends at Homefield Apparel, and our friends at Dave Campbell's Texas Football. Until then, adios.